Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 26, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. I can't believe we've already gotten halfway through the week. Doesn't seem possible. This week is like a blur for me. It's the last week before school, and we have the kitten rescue mission going on. It's just so amazing how kittens can distract you for hours on end. Oh, look, it's a kitten. So I had to get out here and start paying attention. So where do we leave off yesterday? We left off yesterday with a show titled BioDirect, Monsanto's new RNAi gene flipping spray. Yes, how exciting is that? Monsanto has decided that since they believe that all your concerns about GMOs are in your head, and that was the show we did on Friday, that maybe it'll be easier, instead of genetically modifying the food, just making an RNA spray that they can spray on the food that then flips switches and turns biological processes on and off in the organisms that ingest it. But one of the big concerns that we were reading about is the fact that, oh, one of the tests that they did was they found some nondescript ditch in Indiana loaded with weeds and sprayed it all over. They're talking about using this stuff, by the way, to aerial spray like on farms. They wanted to see what happened. And, you know, the EPA, they went up in front of the EPA back at the beginning of 2014, I believe, and argued how RNA is not dangerous to humans. Because it's natural. It's all natural. We've been eating RNA from different organisms ever since life has been on planet Earth. You get fragments of stuff, and it's never caused any harm, so don't worry about it. Well, a couple things I want to look at this morning is I found a couple briefs out of the advisory board panel meeting that happened at the EPA January 28th of 2014, in regards to this RNA eye spray that Monsanto was working on. This press release came out of May 9th, 2014. By the way, if you missed the show yesterday, please make sure you go to youtube.com/UCYTV, find the Before the First Cup playlist, and you will see yesterday's show and Friday's show going in the notes. Everything will be there. So, sorry, we're going to just jump right on board and continue from where we left off. So the EPA releases FIFRA, Science Advisory Panel Report on Risk Assessment Problem Formulation for RNA Interference Technology. On May 7th, 2014, the Environmental Protection Agency posted the meeting minutes of the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. So I guess that's what FIFRA stands for. Science Advisory Panel, January 28, 2014 meeting on, quote, RNAi technology as a pesticide. Problem formulation for human health and ecological risk assessment. So that is the name of the document, RNA technology as a pesticide. Problem formulation for human health and ecological risk assessment. This report by the FIFRA Science Advice Panel is long-awaited analysis of the critical science issues central to the effective and efficient risk assessment of a promising new pest control technology. In summary, the panel opined that while additional study must be done, pest control products that are developed that utilize RNA interference, more commonly known as RNAi technologies, are not likely to result in adverse effects to humans through ingestion exposure. Now, if we remember back in that story yesterday, pretty much Monsanto came out and said that they really didn't want any of that newfangled testing, long involved safety measures, because it's going to take too damn long and we could just make this stuff on a whim and test it and spray it and make some more and test it and spray it without all that pesky regulatory stuff. And hey, RNA has been everywhere, right? It's natural. It's natural. So if we flip switches on and off and spray it, it's still RNA. It's just like an apple is an apple, right? We've said that before. We flip the switch that makes the apple go brown off, and then we let it grow. So it's still an apple. That is not going to affect you in any way, shape, or form. We're positive of it 5 generations from now, when you're all dead and nobody's going to know any better. How absolutely, I mean, I feel like violated here by the EPA. And not that I ever trusted these assholes, because remember, they're the same ones, Lisa Jackson, that turned off all the RadNet radiation detectors when Fukushima happens. But it sounds to me like the board of experts, the advisory panel that the EPA, and I don't have a list of the names. We should see if we could find that maybe tomorrow and see how in bed everybody is with the lobbying agencies in Monsanto and whose attorney is who. But it appears to me that the board of EPA experts has determined that they agree with Monsanto. Now, there's not a lot of risk to people eating this shit. Not at all. All right, let's get back to the story. So it's not likely to result in adverse effects to humans through ingestion exposure. The panel recommended further study, okay, on the possibility of inhalation and dermal exposures, which is true. I'm going to tell you what. We're going to take a look at some of the past studies that they have done without population's knowledge, where they were spraying poisons from the sky over a city just to see what would happen. The reason why I want to look at some of that stuff, we have before, I think there was one show that we did that was like the 13 most evil human experiments ever done in history, that pretty much looked at all the different ways the government experimented on us without us knowing. And it didn't come out until 40 years later when people had arms growing out of the back of their head. But not only is this one study that I found that I think they did it up until like 1965, I believe, in St. Louis. They were spraying stuff over St. Louis. Well, where do you think Monsanto is? And now they're working on spraying this RNAi again. They said that they did it in Indiana, but you better believe they probably got some sort of like crop science lab there that they're going to be testing things on. I don't know. This is just not cool. But anyway, getting back to the different venues for exposure, inhalation is a big one, and I'm going to tell you why. Because there are a few times now that we've dug into things such as nanotechnology, and one of the ways that they were anticipating being able to easily not only get it into your body, but to be able to bypass the blood-brain barrier was through inhalation. So be careful. So anyway, let's see what they have to say. The panel recommended further study of the possibility of inhalation and dermal exposures and of possible effects to individuals with certain medical conditions. Well, phew. So how, you know, like, just so ridiculous. Nah, there's, because Monsanto was saying, you're not going to get sick. It's natural. If you eat it, don't worry. And we also believe, we don't have proof, we believe that it doesn't go any further than your saliva and your stomach. And we all know how our bodies and our environment are isolated and not part of an ecosystem. Correct? Right. Right. Don't let the genie out of the bottle. All right, where did I end up? Regarding possible ecological effects, the panel noted significant uncertainties based on the currently available data and information. The panel concluded that a substantial amount of new data should be generated to better understand environmental fate, likelihood of exposure, and modes of action and potential effects. I bet Monsanto was so pissed off. You non-science board members. I mean, seriously, that story we read on Friday basically said that the reason why people don't like GMOs is that it's all in their head. They're the people who don't understand science and just have these mental blocks toward eating anything new. Now, I'm sorry. I got mental blocks on my food. I am definitely a picky, picky food person. But it's not about, like, food. It's not, like, picky between a tomato and a potato. It's picky as in, and honestly, this was before we even knew the dangers. I've never in my life been good at eating or drinking anything in plastic because I can smell that plastic smell and it taints. I have a very sensitive nose and I can taste with my nose. I don't know if anyone's ever tried that, but when you're cooking, you cook and then you waft and you can bring the steam up. I can literally taste what's cooking in the pot just by smelling it. So when I, like as a kid, my mother would put a sandwich into a plastic baggie and you'd take it out and all you could smell was the plastic. That totally ruined my lunch because my lunch tastes like plastic, not like Roman Pride whole wheat bread. She used to make us eat that crap. Though it was probably healthier than white bread, right? But anyway, so Monsanto says it's all in our heads because lunatics like me, you know, who would have thought it? 30 or 40 years later, we find out plastics are poison. And they've been leaching BPAs into shit we've been eating and drinking for years. Well, good thing, because you know what? My nose knew. I stayed away from that shit, tuna too, and milk. And now look at tuna milk and plastic. It's all poison. All right. Anyway, back to the story. I lost my spot. Hold on. There's major allergens going on right now, too. The whole household is stuffed up, including the cats. We're all with our eyes and our noses and sneezing. I think it's that goldenrod season. It's only in the 60s here now, and all the trees are just starting to get the little edges of red. So fall is coming very soon to upstate New York, and August isn't even over yet. All right, here we go. So the panel concluded that a substantial amount of new data should be generated to better understand the environmental fate, likelihood of exposure, modes of action, and potential effects. Moreover, the panel recommended that the EPA develop a new ecological risk assessment paradigm for RNAi products. Ding, ding. Oh, I bet Monsanto is beyond tweaked on this. They were ready to just completely let this genie out of the bottle everywhere. If the EPA follows the panel's recommendations, which that's a question whether or not they will, there may be significant delays, yay, in the actual RNAi regulatory process as new data and information are generated and as the EPA develops an ecological risk assessment model specific to these products. The phenomenon of RNAi was first elucidated by Andrew Fire and Craig Mello in 1998. In essence, RNAi is a means of controlling protein expression in cells. And for this to work, the pair was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 2006. The number of agricultural and pharmaceutical products are now in development that attempt to utilize RNAi either as genetically transformed constructs or as extrageously applied products. The EPA anticipates receipt of applications for registration of pest control RNAi products as well. And remember, we talked about this is that same technology that is in all of these newfangled vaccines you're seeing coming out. Ebola was one. I mentioned Techmira yesterday. We ran across them because they had their technology purchased by Monsanto. And Techmira was one of those DARPA, Department of Defense, venture-funded biotech companies that were part of that project BioShield, right? We looked at that last week or the week before, back from the days of George Bush in the name of national security for the development of drugs to keep us safe from biowarfare agents that could be held in the stockpile we were obligated to buy. They were untested on humans, but hey, they were new and novel. And we'll hold them, and in the case of an actual emergency, we'll pull out the stockpile and start injecting people without FDA approval because, hey, it's an emergency. Yes, that sort of company. Techmira was one of those companies, and they were working on their Ebola vaccine, quote-unquote, when the quote-unquote outbreak happens. Well, it seems that the FDA pulled their licensing for a little while because, oh, they needed to do a little more testing. And then they came out, they abandoned the technology now. I saw yesterday Techmira did. They probably sold that division off. They're off doing something else now, and I don't remember, and I really don't care, but it's not RNAi. We also saw Bill Gates and 13 other bazillionaires invested in a gene editing company. Don't think that these lunatics aren't planning on unleashing this isle of Dr. Moreau from every upside down and sideways direction on planet Earth, because they really are. I mean, when I just kind of let my mind relax and I see all the timelines in front of me and I start surfing down them to see what potential futures we could have, I see one that looks like it came out of a Salvador Dali painting. And I don't like that at all. We need to stop this, people. This is beyond mad science. This is the manipulation of genetic life. Without understanding the consequences. That's what gets me. You know, we read a story about the epigenome and how even stress in our past, bad lifestyle choices, right? That's how they're going to decide whether or not we're good breeding stock. See how many bad lifestyle choices we made that affected our future genes. But if even stress or a couple McDonald's hamburgers or a couple extra brews in college affected your breeding stock that much, what do you think this stuff is going to do to our progeny? I mean, I know in that story we were reading yesterday out of MIT Technology Review, like, yeah, those guys are on our side. We were reading that story yesterday. They're like, oh, yeah, Monsanto says we could just turn them on for a little while, then turn them off, and don't worry about it. It biodegrades in the soil in 48 hours, and this is just a temporary change to your genes, and maybe they'll go back to normal after we screw them all up. Yeah, don't worry about it. I mean, And you know what? We don't need any regulatory approval. They said that too, because you know what? It's RNA. It's natural. I mean, talk about trying to bamboozle the idiots who are sitting at the table just believing everything science tells them that it's good for you. Take the golden key. It's immortality. It's your cure for cancer. It's your next quick fix. It's, hey, we learned to control brain chemicals too. Here, take one of these and you'll get your dopamine boost. We're just a society of addicted and technologically addicted people. I think that's what it is. They've gotten us to love technology to the point where we're going to embrace anything they give us in the name of moving humanity forward. And I don't think that this is the way. I think that humanity is going the wrong direction right now. And there's a cliff right up ahead with the apple hanging over the edge. And it's got big pointy teeth. All right. Sorry, I'm tired this morning. All right, let's get back here. So back to these two Nobel Prize winning clowns who came up with this mad science technology. A number of agricultural and pharmaceutical products are now in development that attempt to utilize RNAi. Oh, yeah, we talked about the Ebola vaccine. There's quite a few others. Start searching for vaccine RNA, and you'll find a plethora. Recognizing that RNAi technology will raise novel science questions that will be crucial to appropriate regulatory treatments of these products, the EPA began preparing in about 2012 to convene a meeting of the FIFRA to advise the agency on these complex science issues. And at the beginning of the January 28, 2014 meeting, the panel was asked 7 broad questions relating specifically to problem formulation for RNAi risk assessment. 3 of these broad questions related to human health considerations, and the 4th addressed ecological risk. Regarding human health considerations, the panel opined, that current information on the genetic composition of the human genome can be used to assess whether RNAi sequences could possibly bind to human genes. Now, here's the thing. We're just in our infancy of really understanding all of the mysteries of genetics. I mean, yeah, we've been gene sequencing upside down and sideways, but do we really understand what it means to slice and dice? And I don't think so. I think that there's some horrifying experiments going on in the lab right now, but I don't think there's any rich dude out there who would be the first one in line to say, yeah, I totally understand that you guys know what you're doing, and I'll let you change things and give me superpowers because you're just so technologically advanced in manipulating DNA. Sure. No, I don't think so. Bill Gates would not be the first to line up for this because it's not ready for prime time. Remember, you and me, our kids, the nature, the bees, the pigs with the human organs. We are all the guinea pigs. All right, back to this story. So, yes, the panel opined that the current information on genetic composition on the human genome can be used to assess whether RNAi sequences could possibly bind to human genes. The panel also concluded that there is no evidence yet supporting a concern that RNAi ingested sequences could survive mammalian digestive processes and lead to adverse health effects. I said yesterday, I want to get some of this stuff over to Dr. Huber. Tell you what, now I definitely am going to try to find a way to get all this to Dr. Huber because I call bullshit on this. And they did say that there was a concern for inhalation and transdermal, but not through the digestive processes. And I mean, it's very possible. But on the other hand, I don't know. I don't want to be eating some sort of Frankenstein RNAi sequence and have it absorb, who knows, through your tongue. I mean, digestion begins in the mouth. How about it absorbs under your tongue, right? That's supposed to be like one of the big absorption routes into the bloodstream. What about through your cheek? I don't know about that. That there's absolutely no evidence that there's no concern whatsoever. So what does that mean? Does that mean that we're giving Monsanto the green light to start spraying this shit everywhere to see what happens? Because that's almost what that sounds like. No concern at all. It says the panel recommended additional study to confirm that physiologically active sequences do not survive the digestive process. So at least we're going to do a little more study. And that RNAi constructs be evaluated for potential exposure through inhalation and dermal routes, and that the possibility of adverse effects in individuals with certain health conditions be examined. They don't mention what those health conditions are. Regarding potential ecological impacts of RNAi constructs, the panel raised significant concerns as to whether the EPA's current ecological testing framework is adequate to address the unique risks that may be posed by RNAi products. Now, why aren't there those same concerns with GMO crops or GMO insects like the moth that they released in New York, or the mosquitoes that they're releasing now all over? Why don't we have these same concerns, EPA? The panel identified concerns with how these products may affect non-targeted species, including developmental and long-term effects, and the appropriate test species to enable the agency to draw conclusions regarding non-target effects, as well as a lack of understanding of how long these constructs, yes, may survive in the environment forever. The panel has made numerous recommendations to the agency to assist in developing a scientifically valid ecological risk assessment scheme for these products. Given the panel's large number of recommendations to the EPA, it is clear that companies developing these products may face significant regulatory hurdles. Oh, damn, Monsanto, Syngenta, and Bayer. You guys were just so hoping, rubbing those evil scientists' hands together, that they were just going to green light it on your word. While the EPA's regulatory processes for the current set of genetically engineered plant incorporated protectants, more affectionately known as PIPs, is well established, and the risk assessment process for these products is now routine, I would like to see that. It is clear that, at least with respect to ecological risk assessment, the SAP is recommending that the EPA develop a new RNAi risk assessment paradigm based on RNAi-specific data and information that may yet have to be generated. Yes, like they still don't know because they haven't tested it yet. How about some long-term studies to see how it passes down through multiple generations? That would probably be a good start. If much of the new data identified by the SAP has not been generated, this could mean that regulatory approvals for RNA products could be significantly delayed. Phew. Thus, if adopted, the recommendations will have significant impacts on the time it takes to obtain a registration, the total cost of the required data development, and could impact product development decisions. We believe that the EPA should move quickly to identify for technology producers exactly what new data will be required so that this extraordinarily promising or destructive technology is not unduly delayed. Dun, dun, dun. So there you have it. And that was a year and a half ago, and I have not heard a peep since. So it'll be very interesting to find out what kinds of things the EPA laid out and what kind of testing Monsanto, Syngenta, and Bayer are doing at this time, to see whether or not their RNAi sprays are going to go to market. Now, back to that story we read yesterday about this RNAi spray. I want to read just this little paragraph because then we're going to hop into evil experiments sprayed over populations. We had looked at a spinoff company from Monsanto that is loaded with scientists and professors from MIT, Monsanto's own R&D departments the head of their BioDirect division, which is the fancy, wonderful, cutesy name for this new spray-on RNAi, BioDirect, as well as some new gentleman that they stuck in there as figurehead CEO. But the new company was called Pre-Series. I'm going to read this paragraph. They called Pre-Series Skunk Works for Monsanto. The basic task at Pre-Series is how to get a large electrically charged molecule like RNA to move through a plant's waxy cuticle and into its cells. Yes, how do you invade the biological organism with our mad science? That's pretty much it. And to do this, researchers are working to encapsulate the RNA into what? Oh, synthetic nanoparticles called lipidoids. And we looked that up. They are also using lipidoids and nanoparticles and RNAi in the treatments of cancer and some of their new cancer nanobot mad science that they're doing now in clinical trials. So look out, because this already has some precedent. Says the idea is to slip them into the plant where the coating will dissolve, releasing the RNA, and formulations get shipped out to St. Louis for testing in greenhouses. So I was right. They are doing greenhouse testing at Monsanto in St. Louis. They had also talked about spraying some of this RNAi stuff in a weedy patch off the road somewhere in Indiana, yeah, which they didn't tell us where it was. But anyway, here, so let's get to another story now in regards to St. Louis and spraying things from the air revealed. And I mean, there are probably 30 experiments at least that were secret that I can point to right now that I've dug up in my research across the board, all across this country over the last 50 or 60, 70 years, where they've experimented on the American public without our knowledge. So any of these people out there, any of these pro-vaccine parents who point to me and tell me that, Jewel, your imagination is just running overboard because none of this stuff is evil and they're not trying to experiment. Why would our government do that to us? There's lots of precedent there, number one. And when we start making the connections, again, let's go back weeks, months even, all these connections we've been making to the former United States biowarfare program that in 1972 got inked as being over as part of that Geneva Agreement. I still don't have the actual name of it. Look it up. But we were maintaining our ability to work on the defensive by creating vaccines. And think about it. You know, that whole vaccine program with Project BioShield and this whole synthetic biology push by the entire federal government, where all these departments now are working on, because it's the new promise for mankind for us to survive and our new bioeconomy at a global level. This is all part of the same thing. Project BioShield started with the universal flu vaccine. I remember that very clearly. Again, DARPA funded, tinkering with RNA and genetically modified tobacco and drowning. I don't remember even what they were doing. They were drowning tobacco and they had mouse genes, some transgenic genes they were sucking out and putting in human genes. I don't know. Read about that GMO tobacco universal flu vaccine at Texas A&M. That was pretty insane. But it's the mad science department. It's all being funded now. It is freely and ethically available. Anybody who wants funds, and hey, if you want to partner with an Israeli company, there's even more money for us to do that. It's like the land of crazies right now. All right. Well, it's been the land of crazies because they've been experimenting on us for a long time. So anyone who thinks that I have a screw loose needs to go check it at the door, because you're wrong. Revealed, Army scientists secretly sprayed St. Louis. Oh, St. Louis again, the home of Monsanto, with radioactive particles for years to test chemical warfare technology. And what we tend to forget is that even though Monsanto was working on developing seeds and GMO foods and RNAi pesticides, we forget that Monsanto started out as a chemical warfare company. Yes, they did. As well as making pesticides. So when we take a look at how these different technologies now are kind of spinning out, we're like, wow, well, yeah, I mean, they can't kill bugs, but they can kill people too, and oh, they could kill all life on Earth, and oh, we could use it to attack our enemies, fields, and animals, and oh my God, it's all the same program. Poisons, people. It is being in the business of creating poisons. All right, let's read this story. So, Army scientists secretly sprayed St. Louis with radioactive particles for years to test chemical warfare technology. No, we wouldn't do that. The United States military. And what's so scary is that all these companies right now are getting all kinds of money from the Department of Defense and DARPA and Project BioShield to develop things again in the name of national security. As long as it's done in the name of national security, the goods of the many outweigh the good of the few. And so if a few people get sick because we did an experiment that we didn't tell anybody about, oh, but it saved millions in the future. The United States military conducted top secret experiments on the citizens of St. Louis, Missouri for years, exposing them to radioactive compounds, the researcher has claimed. While it was known that the government sprayed harmless, quote-unquote, zinc-cadmium sulfide particles over general populations of St. Louis, Professor Lisa Martino-Taylor, sociologist at the St. Louis Community College, claims that radioactive additive was also mixed in the compound. She has accrued detailed descriptions as well as photographs of the spraying, which exposed the unwitting public, predominantly in low-income and minority communities, to radioactive particles. Now, the thing is, how many times have we seen this? There were spraying projects over California. There were spraying projects over Florida. What? Oh, there's some sort of, who knows what spraying project is going on in the sky, but I'm going to tell you, for anyone who denies that there is something going on in the sky right now, I've seen it twice now this summer. Once was this past weekend again. As I am going south, let's say, from New York State to Pennsylvania, I'm going to tell you, in New York, my skies are clear with puffy blue clouds. This is twice this has happened to me this summer. And as I start getting to that PA line, all of a sudden, and I'm looking out, I got a sunroof in my car. My car's really old, but that's why I keep it, because I got a sunroof. It's awesome in the summer. My roof is open. I'm driving. I look. Everywhere on my right is blue sky with just perfect few little cotton ball-y puffy clouds. Off to my left, which is Pennsylvania, looks like we had somebody on amphetamines using an Etch-a-Sketch in the sky. The whole sky is just like zip, 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 zip. No rhyme or reason. Just ugly, destructive, like, I don't know. I can't even think. Let's think of some violent slasher. I mean, the sky is, and it is like there is a straight line cut down the sky over my head. The perfect, normal, old school sky and the crazy, schizophrenic, chemically laden lunatic sky to my left. Twice I've seen that. And I pointed that out to my kid. I said, look, I want you to pay attention. That is what the sky looked like when I was a kid in my entire life. This, I don't know what this is, but this is not normal. So anyway, I'm not going to get into that. I'm just saying, don't think that there is no precedent for them to spray us with shit and not say anything about it, because it's all over. It's all throughout the last 40, 50, 60 years they've been doing that stuff. Anyway, back to the story. The study was secretive for a reason. They did not have volunteers stepping up and saying, yeah, I'll breathe in zinc, cadmium, sulfide with radioactive particles, said Professor Martino Taylor. No, just like they are not going to have volunteers stepping up saying, I'll breathe that newfangled RNAi stuff, Monsanto, to make sure that it doesn't affect me with additional body parts growing out of my eardrums in the future. You know, nobody's going to step. Who's going to step up for that? Especially to test a quote-unquote insecticide. I mean, when they tell you that it's going to cure your cancer, they can prey on the desperate. The only ones who are going to be able to test this on are going to be like the Indian farmers over in India who are already committing suicide over the GMO crops, or maybe the Africans. They can go down there and see how many people have mutations, their eyeballs fall out, or limbs fall off. All right, anyway, back to this professor. Through her research, she found photographs of how the particles were distributed from 1953 to 1954 and 1963 to 1965. Now, here we go. In Corpus Christi, very near and dear to my heart, in Corpus Christi, the chemical was dropped from airplanes over large swaths of the city. And in St. Louis, the army put chemical sprayers on buildings. Yes, the army put chemical sprayers on buildings like schools and public housing projects and mounted them in station wagons for mobile use. How lunatic is this? This professor accrued hundreds of pages of declassified information, which she has made available online. And in her research, she found the greatest concentration of spraying in St. Louis was at the Pruitt-Igoe public housing complex, which was home to over 10,000 low-income residents. She said that 70% of those residents were children under the age of 12. Professor Martino Taylor became interested in the topic after hearing independent reports of cancers among city residents living in those areas at the time. She says this was a violation of all medical ethics, all international codes, and the military's own policy at that time. And guess what, guys? It is still military policy. They're not going to tell us because it is against ethics. It's against the Geneva Convention. You cannot do testing on people without their consent. And that's why Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is in trouble in India with that Gardasil vaccine, because all these girls got maimed and sick, and all they did was put an X on the dotted line for the 32-page consent document that they didn't apparently understand. There's a lot of evidence that shows people in St. Louis and the city, in particular minority communities, were subjected to military testing that was connected to a larger radiological weapons testing project. And it's way beyond that. I mean, they were doing this shit all over the country, not only with radiological weapons, but with chemical and biological as well. Previous investigations of the compound were rebuffed by the military, which insisted it was safe. However, Professor Martino Taylor believes the documents she's uncovered, and she better be careful because they don't like people like her. The documents she's uncovered prove that the zinc cadmium sulfide was also mixed with radioactive particles. She has linked the St. Louis testing to a now defunct company called U.S. Radium. The controversial company came under fire and numerous lawsuits after several of its workers were exposed to dangerous levels of radioactive materials at its fluorescent plant, in its fluorescent paint. I thought so. The glow-in-the-dark watches back from the 50s and the 60s used the U.S. radium paint. That's why one of my parents' friends for many years was a welder, and he did a lot of nuclear reactors. That was his job. And so he used to get the dosimeters after he'd been working on a job, and he gave me one time that he zeroed out for me. And I don't know, I was a kid. It was kind of cool to look through, but I didn't know what to do with it. So my mother had it, and it sat for years in her jewelry box on her dresser. And I will never forget. I was probably about 15. I'm digging through her jewelry box the one day. You know, we used to do that when we were kids. Like, oh, look at the pretty jewelry. It was nothing fancy. I mean, you know, little flower pins or whatever. But here was this dosimeter, and I held it up to the window, and I'm looking, and the needle is pegged. And I remember showing it to my mom going, hey, did you see this? Why is the needle pegged on this? And it ends up that there was the glow-in-the-dark watch of my grandfather's back from the 50s sitting in that jewelry box. And yes, sitting in that jewelry box, it pegged the dosimeter, and it was U.S. radium. I remember it actually said that on the watch. U.S. Radium had this reputation where they had been found legally liable for producing a radioactive powdered paint that killed many young women. Yeah, because you know why? They used to lick the paintbrush. I read about this. They would lick the paintbrush to make the tip fine, and they all got poisoned. That killed many young women who painted fluorescent watch tiles, said Professor Martina Taylor. In her findings, one of the compounds that was sprayed on the public was called FP2266, according to the Army's documents, and was manufactured by U.S. Radium. The compound, also known as radium-226, was the same one that killed and sickened many of the U.S. Radium workers. The Army has admitted that it added a fluorescent substance to the harmless compound, but whether or not the additive was radioactive remains, classified. Professor Martina Taylor has not been able to find if the Army ever followed up on the long-term health of the residents exposed to the compound. In 1972, yes, right when we inked that Geneva Agreement, the government destroyed all of the Pruitt-Igoe housing. Upon learning of the professor's findings, Missouri lawmakers called on the Army to detail the tests. I share and understand the renewed anxiety of members of St. Louis community that were exposed to the spraying of chemicals as part of Army tests during the Cold War. The impacted communities were not informed of the tests at the time and are reasonably anxious about the long-term health impacts the tests may have had on those exposed to the airborne chemicals. Senator Roy Blunt calls the findings, quote, absolutely shocking. Really? Is it absolutely shocking? Anyone who points to any of this stuff and says, well, there's no evil behind any of this. They wouldn't be testing this on us if it wasn't safe. They wouldn't be giving our babies vaccines with components in them that could cause cancer or autism or autoimmune diseases. No, why would they do that? Because they care about you. Well, let history be a lesson to you. All right. We got a few more minutes. There was another story out of the MIT Technology Review that I caught in the recommended items underneath the story that we were reading yesterday. Synthetic Life Seeks Work is the name of the story. A startup company says that it is expanding the language of DNA to create new tools for drug discovery. The story was August 19th of 2015. And yes, you will remember last year we looked at the creation of the first alien life on Earth. It was by adding two additional proteins to the DNA strand. All life has C, A, T, and G. They have now added X and Y, and they were spinning this up as the new way to create all kinds of new fangled pharmaceuticals that are going to save you and me. Well, here we go. A new startup company says that it is expanding the language of DNA to create new tools for drug discovery. Oh, how exciting. In May 15th, 2014 edition of the journal Nature, Floyd Romsberg's chemistry lab at San Diego Scripps Research Institute. That's another one to keep your eye on. Scripps is always coming out with mad science gone mad. Published a paper titled, quote, "A Semi-Synthetic Organism with an Expanded Genetic Alphabet." Oh, how fun. Romsberg and his colleagues had created a bacterium incorporating chemical building blocks that, as far as anyone knows, have never, ever been a part of any earthly life form, ever. There have been previous claims to creating life. Genome pioneer Craig Venter had led a team that manufactured a genome for a germ that causes pneumonia in cows, but their effort used the familiar chemical bases of DNA known as A, C, T, and G. Romsberg's group, however, has added two additional letters dubbed X and Y. And when the bacteria successfully replicated X and Y in succeeding generations, I told you guys it was self-replicating alien life that they've created. Romsberg's lab could claim to have made the first living thing with an expanded genetic code. People would ask what the big deal is, he said. And I said, imagine you had a language with only four letters. It would be clumsy, and it really would curtail the kinds of stories you could tell. So now imagine two more letters to your alphabet. You could write more interesting stories. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, what a nice way to put mad science into a simple little story. It's not that simple. New drugs are the most obvious story that could be told with the technology. A startup company called Synthorax. 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 Created by Romsberg and the venture fund Avalon Ventures, has exploited E. coli bacteria containing X and Y to help manufacture a protein. A step the company's president and CEO, Court Turner, describes as, quote, our baby unicorn. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't want baby unicorns hopping around. We don't need baby E. coli unicorns. Thank you very much. The company did not identify the protein except to say that it is, quote, well studied, unquote. Of course it is. And they have added a new function to it, a way for another drug to attach to the protein at a specific site. This technology might also pave the way for new biotech drugs, nearly all such drugs. Proteins like insulin or blood cell booster erythropoietin are made inside a bacterium or other cell, but synthetic DNA could vastly expand what drugs are possible. How exciting! That's because a normal cell builds proteins from just 20 amino acids, stringing them together in long chains. Exactly which amino acid gets added next is specified by three-letter sequences of DNA called codons. Although the math gets complicated, yes, for all you puny-brained humans, with the addition of the new bases X and Y, Romsberg approximately tripled the number of possible codons and theoretically increased the number to 172 new amino acids that a cell could build a protein from. Now, that has got to frighten you. Frightens me, adding two additional amino acids to a DNA strand gives us 172 new different combinations which some sort of living creature can develop into. Says this is important because scientists have invented thousands of artificial amino acids. It just hasn't been very easy to make proteins from them. And unlike conventional drugs where chemists exert exquisite control over the position of every atom, with proteins they mostly still need a living thing to do their manufacturing for them. But when you get to whole proteins, chemists really lose the ability. Proteins are too big and too complex, so eventually there could be bacteria producing entirely new proteins. To make a billion-dollar business, yes, $1 billion, we need a protein. And the home run is the ability to produce therapeutic proteins with unnatural amino acids in them. There we go. That's how we make a billion-dollar business, is making artificial proteins that we can then cure all the medical ills with. And hey, if it doesn't get any worse, here we go, really quick before the end of the show. New software to prevent medical errors using DNA. Well, yes, just give it up. Psyaps is trying to figure out if you'll react badly to a drug before you take it. Well, check this out. When Hollis Klendenberg checked into the Sanford Health with chest pains just a couple of years after receiving a stent procedure on his heart, his physician began composing another electronic prescription for a blood-thinning drug called Plavix. But a software alarm stopped the doctor short. It turns out that at 73, Klendenberg is a genetic mutation which makes his body more susceptible to clotting with Plavix, and he's better off with another blood thinner. And now his doctors know, thanks to a new effort by Sanford Health, the biggest healthcare provider in the Dakotas, to accumulate its patients' DNA. It is part of the new personalized medicine, an emerging discipline supported by, bing, bing, Precision Medicine Initiative by Obamacare. Didn't I tell you guys that they were going to do that? Well, it's happened. Step right up. Give them your DNA. It's all for your benefit. And it's going to make you healthy in the future. All right, guys. Well, guess what? I got about 5 seconds left. It is Wednesday. Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. We got Josh Live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Continual Condition with Jonathan and Steven at 8. At 9 p.m. Hold on. My bumper's muted. There we go.